This is Water Podcast. Welcome to the Water Podcast, episode 9, recorded November 28th, 2008. Water is a tool for testing web applications. You can find more about water in episode 1. My name is Željko Filipin. With me today is Paul Rogers, Water co-founder.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Would you tell us something about you?
Sure, my name is Paul Rogers. I've been a software testing for well over 10 years. I live in Calgary with my two kids, Jake and Alice, and my wife Lisa.
How did you get into computers?
Back in about 1984, my parents got me a Commodore VIC-20. That was my first one when I was a teenager. I'd been doing a lot of work with science and the engineering faculties at my school I was with. That was what really interested me.
You loved computers since you were a kid?
That's right, yeah. Since I was about 14, I guess.
Oh, pretty young. How did you get into software testing?
I've been working in electronic equipment manufacturing and circuit board test and design. But I really couldn't see that as a viable career in Southeast England at the time. I guess that would have been the early 90s. I'd mostly been doing hardware testing and designing test equipment. So moving to software testing was a fairly logical and easy move.
And how did you get into software test automation?
I was getting more and more frustrated with trying to test applications manually. It was taking too long. It was very repetitive. I have a fairly short attention span. And so automation and making computers do the work seemed a pretty easy step for me to do.
And along the way, you met Brett Petticord and decided to do something that's called Water Now, right?
That's right. I'd been writing my own tools using VB and VB script to manipulate IE. And I'd also been using some commercial tools. I wasn't having very luck with either of these approaches. But I came across a conference flyer that had details of a class that Brett and Brian Marrick were teaching using Ruby and the IE controller by Chris Morris. So I downloaded this stuff and looked through it all. And I was using Chris's controller, but it wasn't really great for what I was doing. So I started modifying it. And after a few hours, I actually had working automation. I was completely sold on this language and this tool. And a friend of mine, Jonathan Cole, put me in touch with Brett, or maybe it was Brian, I can't remember. We started talking about doing this new API for a new testing tool. And I think it was in the Agile conference in Calgary in 2004. We met up for the first time and kind of got the API better fleshed out. We were working on a little bit during 2004. But the end of the year in 2004 or early 2005, I got laid off from the job I was doing at the time, and I stayed at home with my young kid. And when he slept during the day, I'd work on water.
Oh, I remember somebody mentioned that on IRC.
That's right.
That you spend a year on leave and working on water.
That's right, yeah. I don't think it was a whole year. I think it was maybe half of the year.
You said already you've used VB and VBnet, VB script, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you've used a lot of programming languages, right?
Yeah, I've used an awful lot of languages.
Would you name some?
Sure. I was using Java for a long time for testing tools. I think VB script was probably one of the ones I used most, as that was available on a lot of computers.
Would you compare some of that languages with Ruby? You said you like Ruby. Do you like Ruby the most?
Absolutely, I like Ruby the most. It's much nicer to use than any other languages. It's cross-platform, which really helps. And it's much nicer to use.
I'm glad you and Brett chose Ruby for water. I like it too.
I think it was Brett that chose it.
Yeah, I think I've read that somewhere, yeah. he had a chart of languages and their characteristics like object orientation and ease of use, syntax and stuff like that. And at the end he said, I liked Ruby the most, so I chose it. Why do you like testing?
I like challenges. I like automation especially, as it gives me some really good opportunities to work on projects that let me explore and understand problems and come up with kind of innovative solutions.
None of those I like to break stuff.
Stuff's already broken when I get it. I just have to find where it's broken.
Yeah, that's an old joke. Could you tell us a little bit about the applications you are testing right now and some in the past?
Yeah, the application I'm working on currently is called the Tint Web Overlay. It's a very different, innovative application to most. It lets users annotate other web pages by adding elements like sticky notes and speech bubbles to photos and stickers, kind of like glasses or wigs onto photos. It's all Ajax. There's a drag-and-drop interface. It's multi-browser. So this is a real challenge to automate. If you want to log onto the web and look at tint.com, T-Y-N-T.com, you can try it directly from the web interface and see how it works. But it's very, very different to many applications and a real tough one to automate.
Just typing it into browser. Yeah, I've seen at Twitter you and Marek J were chatting something about Tint, right?
That's right. He came across it somehow last week. I've recently done a presentation to a local QA group here in Calgary, and I think he saw the slides from that. And he's tried it a few times and really likes it. He actually showed up a bug for me earlier in the week.
Oh, I saw with that a hat or something on somebody's head, right?
That's right. Each of these stickers sticks onto photographs, and we can set whereabouts on the sticker it sticks. And this particular one was set up incorrectly. So when it was stuck on someone's head, it was actually sticking onto the site logo or something. So it didn't work properly when the browser was resized.
So it has some image recognition capabilities?
No, we just look for the images in the DOM and find their coordinates.
I thought it inspects the image and finds faces like Picasso does.
Not yet. Maybe one day.
Yeah, it's a long way to go.
Yeah, this is already pretty tough to do.
And could you tell us something about the challenges you have with the application, with the testing?
The testing is different. It's cross-browser. There's no... unlike many applications where you'd get a bug or a definite failure, because this is all sort of positioned, it's difficult to explain a bug where something's incorrectly positioned and to reproduce it for development. The automation challenges are even harder. It's cross-browser, cross-platform. It's a drag-and-drop interface, which is difficult to automate. It uses some very non-standard or little understood web elements like VML and SVG graphics. And the biggest challenge of all is that it has to work on every page in the web. So our menu mustn't interfere with the underlying page and all JavaScript must work. And the underlying page must work correctly too. So this is very, very difficult to test.
As you were talking, I was just playing with it and it's really cool. I personally don't know how I would start testing it. I've just added some comic words to waterpodcast.com and it has stickers and drawings and really amazing.
it's a cool product for people to use. One of our big markets are teenagers using sites like Facebook and other social networking sites. And as well as people who use it for blogs, to use post-it notes and highlighting the text on blogs.
Yeah, I've seen a feature on some blogging software that you can comment a particular sentence or something. Not like all current blogging software has, like when you have to comment entire post. So this could be something like that. You can mark a sentence or paragraph and add your comment there.
Yeah, the big difference with Tint compared to other things is that the comments that you make are now in context. So instead of the comment being at the very end of the article, you can highlight the bit you're really commenting on and add sticky notes right next to it. So it's a much more meaningful experience.
So when somebody comes to waterpodcast.com using Tint, he will see the changes I made.
That's right, if you make them public. Right now you can make them public so that anybody can see them, or you can make them private so that only the people that you share them with can see them.
Very interesting. I guess the team that does that couldn't be very small. How big is the development and testing team there?
Right now we have 5 developers, and from next week there'll be just me in testing.
It's not so big, I expected more people.
The small team is kind of good because we can change direction very quickly. It's difficult to test though because it's cross-browser. So we're spending a lot of time looking at it now to figure out what's the best thing for us to do with this product. Maybe remove some features. We've added a few that don't work as well as we'd like. And we may remove some browser support because the amount of effort it takes to code and develop for it isn't worthwhile in the number of users that we get on that browser.
Moving on to more water code, which editors or IDEs are you using for writing water and Ruby code?
Well, when I started working at Tint, which was just over a year ago, my boss suggested I get a Mac. I really like it, so our whole development group uses Macs. The only Windows machines we have are test machines. I use TextMate. I think our whole development group uses TextMate for developing.
I recently got Mac too, and I've tried TextMate, but I don't know, just didn't click for me. Maybe I'll try it some more. So, my usual first question about water is, when did you start using it? But you started using it before it was called water, right?
That's right, yeah. I think it was 2004 we started working on it, and every job I've had since then has used water in a number of ways.
And for what have you been using water for, like quick and dirty smoke tests or regression tests? Or
I think we've used it for every type of testing, like you've mentioned. I personally like it for using it for regression testing.
Yeah, I'm mostly using it for regression testing of our web app. Is there anything special you like about water?
I like the API. It's a really easy to understand and clean API. I made a few mistakes when I was working on it back in 2004-2005. And the water API should be a bit more like the HTML or DOM or JavaScript API. And the water methods and properties should better match the HTML ones. But I think on the whole it's pretty good.
Yeah, I think I've made a wiki page that suggests that water methods have the same names as HTML tags. It's good to have it the Ruby way, so to have multiple aliases for the same method, like links for A tags and stuff like that, but for somebody new, I guess it would be nice to have water methods the same as HTML tags, but that's another topic. Is there anything you don't like about water?
I don't think there's too much I dislike. I think we would have fixed it if it had been very bad. Probably the thing I like the least is the pop-up handling for things like JavaScript alerts and file handling. I don't think I've really had to deal with these very much, which is why I've never really put very much time into trying to fix them.
Seems like nobody who has who knows how to fix it has problems with pop-ups, and lots of people that have to deal with pop-ups don't know how to fix it.
Yeah, it's a very ugly problem to deal with, especially now that we're using Firewater as well. So I have to deal with it cross-browser, the IE6 and IE7 having different pop-ups, and now Firewater on Mac and Windows has different pop-ups. And for JavaScript alerts, they're really a very unpleasant user experience. The file handling's a bit different, as that's you really need that in many applications, but I would really question your design if you have to use a JavaScript alert anywhere.
I like... I think that Gmail has some pop-ups that really just a div text that gray out the rest of the page and just say, are you sure you want to do something?
Yeah, that's a much nicer user experience. And I think as the business analysts start understanding that we can't keep up with the testing of everything, they'll start understanding that doing things like Gmail does with a lightboxed HTML dialogue rather than a JavaScript alert is a much nicer user experience as well. Yeah. And we can test it far easier.
I always thought in applications I was testing, any time a pop-up would appear, I always said, oh, we had to get rid of this, I can test it, and I've had luck so far.
One of the things that Selenium does is to override the alert method so that it actually does do something different. It's not a JavaScript dialog box. It's actually, like you said, a div tag that lightboxes the screen so that it is much easier to test. That's maybe something we could consider, especially for Firefox, where it's fairly easy to inject this type of stuff into the browser. So that's another solution that may be the easiest, but I think fewer and fewer people are using JavaScript alerts these days, and it's just more the file selector dialog box that becomes a problem.
In my test, I'm using a lot of file uploads, and I should be using some file downloads, but I didn't get it to work, so I decided not to test it via Water.
Yeah, this type of situation, I've gone to our developers or to the business analysts and said, you know, it's really difficult to test this. Can we, instead of having the pop-up box, can we get a URL for the file download and just download it directly? Or for the file upload, can we use an easier method to actually test the upload works, maybe doing FTPing or something like that? Or maybe it's even, we don't even test this part in an automated way, maybe the effort to do it just isn't worthwhile.
I find that file uploading works really well in Water, but as I said, file downloads, I haven't tried. File uploads used to be really slow. It took, I don't know, 5 to 10 seconds to upload, to populate the pop-up. But now they fix it and it's really fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't used them for a long, long time.
I see them every day. Did you use any other frameworks, any other Ruby libraries with Water, like TestUnit, RSpec, Wet, or Rasta, Tmail?
I've used TestUnit to test my own code, to test the logic in my tests. I haven't used it to test an application. I found it too restrictive. I was really impressed with RSpec, but really didn't get the chance to use it. The code I'm using right now uses Tmail and a library called Rumpster, I think it is, which is a mock email server and client in Ruby, which is really, really useful for us. And I've used a lot of the other libraries as well.
I'm using Tmail for creating and parsing received mails. Our web application also sends and receives mails, and Tmail is just great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're using, I think it's Rumpster, and that's great because I can change the settings in our application to not use a real mail server but to use my mock one, which is pure Ruby, so that the application would send email to this Ruby mail client, which I can then pick up the emails in Tmail format. So it's very, very quick because there's no latency on the mail delivery, and it's no language dependency, and I've got libraries that do most of the work for me.
I've set up, I'm testing in a virtual machine, and I've set up a mail server so it delivers mail to a local folder, and the mail just picks up the files, and it works really fast and just fine. Yeah, sometimes I have to wait, I think, even 6 seconds to mail, to arrive, to a folder. I guess your way is really faster.
I think it's a bit faster than 6 seconds. The slowest part is if we get lots of mail sent to the server and we forget to clear it out, then that takes a long time to clear it out when there's a lot in there. But usually it's very, very fast.
I'll have to take a look. What would you like to see in the future versions of Flutter?
The code I've written for the drag and drop, I'm thinking of making it public available. I don't get a lot of time to work on it, and writing the unit test for this stuff is very difficult. But I think that would be a great addition. There are definitely questions on the list about drag and drop. And if we wrote the unit test using something like Prototype, which is commonly available, then that might help a lot of people.
Yeah, I've seen.
I've also been really interested in model-based testing for a while. I've written a few libraries that help with that. I don't think they're mature enough for general release yet, and I think model-based testing is little understood, and I don't think I'm the big person to be educating the world on it. But those are two things I'd like to see in Water in the future.
Before I forget to ask you, coming to Alta in January next year?
I'd like to, but I'm not sure I can afford to. I went to a conference not long ago, and I don't think my company will cover my expenses, so I would have to pay for it myself, and I'm not sure I can afford it right now.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get there, but I'm not sure too. We have to deliver some software.
I'll try and take another look in a few weeks and see if I can afford it then. It's the time as well as the money, really.
I hope I'll see you there, but...
I hope so.
Who knows? You said you've used Water and Firewater. Have you used other flavors, like Safari Water and implementations in Java.NET?
No, I haven't used any of them. Right now, the Tint application was originally written just for Firefox. So I originally wrote all our tests using Firewater and then ported it to regular water. We're also supporting Safari and Opera and pretty much every other browser right now. So I've been thinking about looking into Safari Water, maybe also WebDriver as a different way of testing this. And I've also been looking at this thing called Mineral Water, which back at the Auto conference a few years ago, Bob Cotton and Brian Merrick worked on. This was basically a sort of unified interface to either Water or Selenium, and I'm thinking I might try and revive that to help out with this testing across browser, but I'm not sure I've got enough time to do it all.
You said you've ported your Firewater tests back to Water. Did you have any problems with it?
Yeah, there was loads of problems. Obviously, the drag and drop's vastly different in both browsers. We had to extend Water considerably to cover all the extra events needed to do drag and drop. The Tint application also uses SVG in Firewater and VML in IE to do some of our graphic stuff. And there's no Firewater or Water code to do that, so we had to write all that as well. That's quite a lot of work. But it works pretty well across browser, considering all the things that we actually do.
I'm thinking about porting my Water test to Firewater. So, but our app is not as nearly 2.0 as Tint. So I guess I wouldn't have so much problems.
This was a hard application to automate, and then to do it cross browser, cross platform was really hard. But I'm really pleased that we've demonstrated that we can do automated tests on this type of application. And I think it would really increase the credibility of automated testing on other applications if people could see the tests that we do on this.
If I could see tests for the Tint that work and that find bugs, and I don't know, I would be really impressed that Tint applications. Looks.
Maybe I should make a movie of it and post it on a website so people can see it.
Yeah, you should definitely do something, because I'm just looking at the page that it hinted, and it, I don't know, it looks really, really too old, and all the graphics and the pop-ups and drag and drop, and I don't know. if you could test that, that would really say something about water and other tools you're using.
Yeah, we have tests for pretty much everything. The sticky notes, the thingies that you can drag onto the page and rotate and resize, and the speech bubbles you can resize. We don't have tests for the highlighting. That's really, really difficult to do. That's actually the most expensive part of our application. And I've had no chance. I haven't had time to automate it yet. It's different for both browsers, and both browsers are very ugly to do. So that's not automated yet. Pretty much everything else is.
I think yesterday I found a strange bug in our site that crashes Internet Explorer 6. I could reproduce it on a production site, but I couldn't reproduce it on my virtual machine. I'm just thinking, did you find any such strange bugs? Because I guess using a lot of JavaScript could crash some browsers, especially older ones.
This is one of the reasons we started working on Firefox before IE. The JavaScript for Firefox has to be a lot stricter than it is for Internet Explorer. And so many of the bugs that we would have found would have been found very, very early on just within the Firefox code base. The automated tests we have right now aren't great. I haven't managed to keep up well enough with the developers. But back in March or April, I think it was, this stuff was amazing. It was finding bugs in almost every build. And I think I posted an email message to the Agile mailing list about this, about how good it actually was compared to many other mechanisms for finding bugs. But unfortunately, it's not as good as it used to be right now, because we've changed a lot of the application and I haven't been able to keep up with the test code.
I know something about how you feel. I'm also running behind my developer with the tests. You were talking about mineral water that has one API and runs water and Selenium behind. I guess you've used Selenium then, right?
I've only used it to try it. I've never actually used it for real testing.
Did you use any other testing tools, open or closed source, for testing?
Yeah, I've written a lot of my own ones in various different languages. Java, JavaScript, VB, VBScript, probably the commonest languages I've used. I also used Silk for a long time, and there was another tool I used as well, which I can't think of the name of now. Visual Test as well.
So that's a part of Visual Studio?
No, it was a separate product. It's probably not been around for probably 8 years or so. It was quite popular for testing Windows desktop applications, I guess about 7 or 8, 9 years ago. But it's kind of fallen out of popularity as it wasn't kept updated. And I think it was bought out by another one of the tool vendors.
I forgot to ask you at the beginning. Now you said you've tested desktop applications. What sorts of applications have you been testing in your career?
Pretty much everything. I spent a lot of time working on some embedded software that was all tested using Ruby. I worked on a project that was used a lot of satellite communication with a web interface. That's where I started working on water. Worked on some banking applications. Before I moved to Canada, I worked on some network cards and phone modem cards and all the software that went with those. So I think I pretty much tested a whole big variety of stuff.
Web-based and desktop applications and command line.
And some desktop applications too. I worked at a company here in Calgary that had a sort of an administration interface into their application. It was a desktop app. And I think that's where I used Silk and Visual Test.
to come back to the other tools for testing. Any of the tools you build your own public, except water?
I don't think so. They may be partially public, but I'm kind of reluctant to do it too much because I really don't get the time to support them.
I see how much support water needs, so I guess if you're a one-man show, it would be really hard.
It really amazed me how much... how many messages go on the mailing list and how many people really use water. It shows how difficult it is for organizations to support their products. And to do it just from an open source community is really hard, which is why we rely on everyone else to contribute to it.
I think I've recently looked at the Water General mailing list at Google Groups now, and I think it has over 1,000 members now. And we moved it from RubyForge to OpenQA and then to Google Groups, so I guess there are not a lot of bouncing users.
Yeah, 1,000 users is pretty big.
Yeah,
I guess there's only about 10 or so that actually regularly answer questions, so that's a pretty small percentage.
But I think that a lot of people are reading the list. I remember when I started using water, I didn't post anything for months. I just read what was going on, and I really learned a lot from just reading the list.
Yeah, it's a great way to understand the product, is to see the other problems that people have and how they solve them.
And at the time, there was not a lot of documentation, and reading the list was a great way to learn.
Yeah, the thing about open source software is that the people that produce the software generally like writing software, and generally don't like writing documentation. So I think it's fairly true of most open source projects.
Yeah, nobody likes to write the docs.
No. That's why the unit test are really good, because it gives you a whole way of seeing how the application's used.
To go back to testing tools, I'm coming back to it, I don't know, for the second or third time. Out of all testing tools you've used, I guess you like water the most.
Absolutely, yeah. I got involved in waters because I wasn't having much luck with any of the other commercial tools or any of the open source tools. And so I had a real need for this, which is why I got involved with it. And I guess that's why the features are driven by need of the people who write the software, which is probably why there's not very good support for the file handling and the JavaScript dialogues, because I've never really needed that, and I'm guessing Brett or Charlie haven't either.
Brett said he's not interesting. I talked to him a few months ago. So, right now, are the people using your water code developer, the other tester?
Right now, it's just the testing group that use this code. The application is written in Rails, so there's no real reason that the developers couldn't use this and couldn't write code for it. But I would much rather them do better unit tests than do better than them work on GUI tests, as that's a much better way for us to test the application. Testing through the GUI really should be the last way of doing it, as it's the least effective. The Tint application is very GUI intensive, which is a very big part of the user experience. So I think it's quite important we have GUI-based tests, but I would rather the developers spent their time writing unit tests for the code behind the GUI rather than working on the GUI tests.
Yeah, I would agree there. You said you don't have a lot of time right now. Do you help out with water in any way?
I recently posted some patches to some event stuff. I worked on a bug with Brett on firewater integration, and I occasionally answer questions on the list. I'd like to do some more, but I just don't get the time for it.
I used to answer a lot of questions on the list, but in the last few months I'm so busy I didn't even read a lot of it. So we're all so busy, I guess. I would like to ask you a bit about some metrics about your code. Would you share with us any metrics that you think are relevant, like number of tests, lines of code, time taken for tests to run or anything you think it's relevant?
So I was looking through your list of questions last night, and I saw your question about the lines of the code, so I actually had a look through. It looks like we have about 20,000 lines.
Of what code?
Of code, yeah. That's in total, so all the tests, all the libraries, things like our email clients and the Firewater and Water extensions to do the different, to do the drag and drop and graphics and things. Now, we have been doing a lot of rearranging and refactoring, so I think there are several copies of some of those files under different names in different directories. So we probably actually use a lot less than that amount of code. The drag and drop code is quite time consuming to run. I think there's some things we can do to speed it up. So the tests are really a bit too slow right now. I can't say how long they do run for, I really can't remember, but they're too slow.
Just an estimate, an hour or a day or a few minutes?
So we have a test that tests the sticky notes that you'd see on the Tint application. That does things like resize them and test for bad characters, what could be considered hacking attempts, and I'm guessing that takes about 12 minutes to run. But then we have to run it on multiple browsers, so IE6, IE7, Firefox 2, Firefox 3, and on Firefox 2 and Firefox 3 on Mac. So that's probably somewhat over an hour just for that one test and all the browsers we support.
And how many such groups do you have?
There's probably 8 or 9 of those different types of tests. So
eight.
I'm guessing it would take if we run them sequentially, I'm guessing it would take about a day to run them all. We also have some model-based tests which run until they stop, and they stop when there's a problem. I've had those run successfully for 24 or 48 hours at a time. And we also have some tests that test the Tint application against multiple different websites, and those run probably for 8 hours to take to go through all the websites and all the tests that we want to do on them. So it's a lot of testing, but it's not as much as I'd like. Definitely need some more in there.
It's never as much as the testers like. How are you testing? You said you have Windows machines. Do you have really Windows machines, or are you using some virtualization software?
We have both. We have several Windows machines, and I think each of them have VMs on them for our different environments. We're using VirtualBox, which is an open source virtualization tool, and that's been really, really good for us. I especially like running it on Linux, because you can run a Windows VM on Linux in headless mode, and you just connect to it from a different PC using a remote desktop. And that's really efficient on resources on the server.
Yeah, I'm thinking about something like that. I'm using I have a Windows and a Mac machine, and I'm using a VMware server at XP, and I'm using VMware Fusion at Mac, so I can port VMs from one machine to another.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm also using Parallels on my Mac. I've got copies of XP and Vista, so I can pretty much test every environment just on my laptop.
I guess you don't have any benchmarks on speed of different virtual machines, but out of feeling, what do you think is VirtualBox faster than other virtualization?
It seemed slow when I was running it on a Windows host with a Windows client, but running it in headless mode on a Linux host with a Windows client, it was very fast.
I'll definitely have to take a look. Okay, that's all for our interview. We have just a few closing questions.
Okay.
Would you share with the listeners an interesting or funny a bug hunt or a testing story or something like that?
Yeah, we recently had a bug that was happening for me, but not for the other tester at Tint. And we eventually realized it was a date bug. I'd created my account last year, 2007, and the other tester didn't start until earlier this year, and he created his account then, and so I would get this bug, and he wouldn't because of the different date calculations on my older account. That was kind of a funny one.
I'm always surprised what can go wrong, and when you find a bug and think, oh, this couldn't be possible.
Elizabeth Hendrickson has a really good PDF on her website of testing heuristics. Always a list of good things to try when testing. And this would be come under one of those ones of using dates across year boundaries.
Yeah, I said it earlier in the podcast when a user reported that his browser crashed on our site, and I asked the developer, and he said, no way, we couldn't crash the site. We have that application up for years, and I set up environment as user said he has an XP box with IE6, and I crashed the browser, and I couldn't believe it. I work from home, and I was working around my house and saying, I couldn't believe it. I've just crashed the browser. I didn't see that in years, really. So I still don't know what's causing it, but every time I go to that place at our application, it crashes the browser. IE6 and IE7 on XP and on XP and on Windows 2003. Unbelievable. What do you like to do when you're not testing?
So we moved to Calgary for the lifestyle here. So outdoor activities like hiking, skiing and kayaking. I've got two small kids, so I try and take those as much as I can with me when I go.
You have one kid that's really small, like a year or so, right?
That's right, she's 11 months.
Oh, I think I remember my kid and my son and your daughter were born about the same in a few days, right?
Okay. I remember seeing the email now, yeah.
Yeah, now I remember. Do you listen to podcasts?
Not very often. I've listened to a few of yours. I like the Vinyl Cafe by Stuart McLean. You can see that on the CBC website for amusement.
And what's that? What's it about?
It's a story about a guy who owns a music store. It's very amusing, very funny.
Oh, it's a humor.
Yeah.
We have a few questions from Water General mailing list. Darin Dufourne, I hope that's right, asked two questions. Will Water ever be able to test Flex and Flash applications?
Maybe. I probably am unlikely to be the person to write that. And again, it's driven by need. If somebody really needs this functionality and really cares about it enough, they'll write it and release it. But I doubt it'll be me.
That's a good answer. Here's another one. He took a look at Wharton and Water implementation in .NET, and he's asking, are you in any contact with Wharton developers?
Not recently. I have exchanged some emails with them in the past, and there was another guy doing a .NET version of Water. I forget what that was called, and we exchanged quite a few emails, but that was quite a long time ago.
So not a lot of contact.
No.
Okay. Well, we have another question. Dave McNallum. He's asking about alternatives to the pesky dialog handling without it. You were talking about it, doing it the Selenium way of removing pop-ups and inserting divs, and do you have any other ideas?
Well, pop-ups are a really unpleasant user experience, so I'd encourage your developers and user experience people to not use them. If you really have to use them, then I guess we could try and come up with a better way of doing it. A number of people have tried at different times. I don't think I have a real need to do them, so I'm, again, unlikely to be the person to write the code to do it.
Somebody will have to do it once. I was just chatting with Charlie Baker before we started recording, and he said if you don't talk about Tint, that I should ask you about it, but since we've talked a lot about it, that's it.
Yeah, I think I sent Charlie the stuff very early on. I'm not sure if he ever tried it or not, though, so I'd be interested to know if he did or not.
Do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, well, I guess thank you for taking the time to listen to me so far, and please try and help out with the Weepwater community. It's there for you. It gets better if you help out, and just make sure you have fun.
That's great. Do you have a website?
Yep, it's paulrogers.ca. I don't update it very often, though.
And you have a Twitter account, right?
That's right, that's Paul Rogers, too.
So people can find you there. Okay, that's all. Thanks for listening to the Water Podcast. If you have something to say, leave a comment at waterpodcast.com. A lot of people help with the questions. Some of them are Alistair Scott, Brad Petticoat, Alan Baird, Charlie Baker, Jari Palkin, and Rich Downey, mostly at Water IC channel. My site is željkovilipin.com, and I'm very glad to say we have a sponsor. Nice people from Watercraft are paying for the hosting, so that means I don't have to. Go to www.watercraft.com. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 Creation License. All links are in episode show notes.
This was Water Podcast.